If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're going to talk about managed versus unmanaged fertility benefits, which I know nothing about. Joining me today is Peter Nieves. He is the Chief Commercial Officer with Wynn Fertility. So welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, I didn't even know there was such a thing as fertility benefits. I mean, isn't that just included in my normal health insurance?
No, it's not covered under what, you know, sometimes referred to as a general medical program. So it has to be specifically requested by the plan sponsor, which is the employer, to be made available to the employee population.
Does this include things like birth control, just normal fertility type, I don't want a baby, or does it only cover if you want a baby?
No. So when we're talking about fertility coverage, it's about when you're experiencing difficulty getting pregnant through natural means. And so what's then required is the application of what's referred to as ART, or assisted reproductive technologies. And so that would be, you know, determined through usually preliminary tests and then a visit to a reproductive endocrinologist to assess the partners, both male and females, challenges that they have to then overcome through, you know, many different approaches.
So if your insurance company, which it sounds like most don't cover this fertility problems you may be having, it can be very, very costly.
Yes, it can. And I will just, you know, one quick comment. There are some states that do require it if it's an insured program, but generally that's not the case. And if you're with a larger employer, you know, it has to be opted for. And yes, it is very expensive. And behind me, I have a picture of four kids and three of them are IVF. So I've lived through this myself. I was at the time, there was no coverage with my employer and we had to pay out of pocket. So yes, it can, you know, all in with the drugs can, you know, generally be between $20,000 and $35,000 for a full blown IVF cycle.
You're saying per cycle. So if I get IVF and it doesn't take, like I don't actually get pregnant or the egg fails to implant, I have to come back in a month or two and try it again for another $20,000.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it's each cycle. So it's a very expensive, the drugs are very expensive, all injectables. And, you may not necessarily need to start there. That's kind of the higher end of the range. You know, you may use other techniques that are much less expensive. It really depends on the assessment of the individuals and what's causing their infertility. So I don't want to scare everybody off, but yeah, it can be very expensive.
We've been talking a little bit more about the woman's side of things. What about if the man it's his issue, like he has low sperm count or motility? If the insurance doesn't cover a woman's side of things under normal insurance, I'm guessing it wouldn't cover a man's side of the issue either.
Well, what regular insurance will cover is the assessment of the condition. And so male factor testing is covered as most of the diagnostic work on the female. But there isn't much you can do to treat the male condition. So as you just mentioned, the motility and morphology, and count overall. So there isn't much you can do. However, you know, something like an intrauterine insemination, which is the lower cost end of the fertility ART spectrum. If the male factor is significant, then that's a waste of money, even though it may only be $5,000 or so, you know, a much lower cost. You're just wasting money because, you know, the sperm can't get to the egg. So it is an important element of the whole diagnostic makeup of the couple. And right now it's increasingly a bigger portion of the overall fertility issues that we're seeing in the country.
That's a lot to digest. We're going to take just a little break. When we come back, we'll get to what you're here for, and it's to talk to us about managed versus unmanaged fertility benefits. So we will be right back with Peter Nieves. He's the Chief Commercial Officer with WIN Fertility.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way whatsoever, we're going to talk about it. And today we're talking about fertility. And do you have fertility benefits through your work? Joining me today is Peter Nieves. He is the Chief Commercial Officer with WIN Fertility. So welcome back, Peter.
Yes, thank you.
In that last segment, we talked about the different issues people could have not being able to have a baby and a little bit of the costs involved. And the high end, you're talking $20,000, $30,000 per try to have a baby if you can't do it the natural way, which is shocking. And if your general insurance doesn't cover that, which most don't, you have to pay for all of this out of your pocket.
That's correct. Yes, it can get very expensive to start or expand your family.
How many companies actually offer what you're calling a managed fertility benefit? Because when you have to pay for everything out of pocket, that would be unmanaged fertility benefits. What would be a managed fertility benefit?
So a managed fertility benefit is when the employer or the plan sponsor will offer the coverage, which is often done through one of two options, either the health plan that they have in place. They just open it up and it's made available, or through a third party. But managed simply means legacy and support that's provided to the individual for their journey. So, you know, just as an example, it was probably 20-something years ago. I was a consultant and working with a very famous company that, you know, sells airline tickets, and they had introduced or wanted to introduce one of the first fertility benefits. And we simply worked it out with a carrier who had never, one national carrier who had never provided a benefit before. And we put a program together. It was the first time that me or any of my colleagues, and I was with a global consulting organization at the time, had put a program in place. And yet 20 something years later, with now, you know, fertility being more popular, it's still mostly just find a doctor and have at it. And that's not necessarily helping anyone. You don't do, if you're looking for any other type of medical support, you know, the health plans often will provide some type of coverage, but they don't always with fertility. Or some health plans actually rely on my company, WIN Fertility, to do that for them. And so managed simply means that working with us as an example, you're getting access to a reproductive endocrinologist trained nurse. They're assigned to you and your significant other to help you through understanding all aspects of, you know, the diagnostic makeup, how to choose the right doctor, the questions, preparing for your first meet, you know, your first doctor visit or any of the subsequent doctor visits, and answering questions, helping you with how to inject the pharmaceuticals. And all aspects of getting essentially pregnant through the means of assisted reproductive technologies. So really, really important to have that type of support. And if you're an individual and your employer is offering that benefit, you should certainly know if you can have that type of managed support. Because if not, you'll be making a lot of decisions, as my wife and I did, kind of blind.
So even if my employer has a fertility benefit, it may not include matching me up with the right person. I may still be on my own trying to find the right person. Even though all of the lab work and everything is covered, I still just have to start picking up the phone and calling people to figure out, are you the right one for me?
Yeah, there's a lot of the health plans have a number of doctors, you know, reproductive endocrinologists in their network. And so very often you'll have a fairly good choice depending on what part of the country you live in. But you just don't know if it's, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you may want to choose one doctor over another. It may be setting. You don't want to go into a city. You want to stay in the suburbs. You may want a male doctor or a female doctor. More importantly, you probably want a doctor that's experienced in the things that you do versus, or the things that you're facing, I'm sorry. Maybe people that are your age or other circumstances. And so having that type of support and understanding, understanding what's available to you is really very important. And then, of course, making sure very basically that you stay in network, because you may not have coverage if you don't, or it would be more expensive if your plan allows for an out-of-network doctor. Usually deductibles and co-pays are more higher.
If I get onto a fertility benefit plan, are we talking my costs are 80% covered, or is it just 50%? I mean, because $20,000, even if it's 80% covered, that's still a lot of money out of pocket.
It is. Well, what's common in the infertility space, similar to other family building solutions, which we also provide help with, is, you know, which is adoption and surrogacy. There's usually a limitation on the total dollars that can be spent. So most of the groups, most employers will offer a lifetime maximum dollar amount that can be spent during your, essentially your employment, towards building your family. And in this case, fertility coverage. Some often have cycle limits where you can say, well, you're allowed two cycles. And for the most part, there is a limitation. And then the coverage itself is often 100% up to that maximum limit. But some employers do opt to put in some type of copay or co-insurance, but often that's not the case.
I want to go back to something you went over really fast, and that was fertility benefits could cover adoption as well.
So a lot of employers do offer some type of adoption and increasingly surrogacy allowance. Now, those are very costly. Surrogacy in particular can get close to $200,000 to have a baby through that means. But we've had a number of employers that are looking at a family building and try a family building benefit versus a fertility benefit and looking to bring parity to the overall options so that the LGBTQ community can also build their family at this with the same level of support that a heterosexual couple would, and then throw singles into that as well. So, you know, heterosexual couple, if they have a $30,000 lifetime maximum for fertility, and maybe they're only offering a lower amount for adoption and surrogacy, well, might not be on par. So there's been a lot more interest in trying to bring those up to par. And we do have, you know, several clients that said, we just want a single family building benefit, regardless of the means and process by which they have to go to get there.
Okay.
So I think it's a very progressive way of looking at it. We support it.
Yeah, no, I like that. It didn't occur to me that would, we definitely want to call it more family benefit planning. How about foster care? I mean, there are expenses involved in fostering children. Would that be included?
Not that I've seen. No, not yet, but that's a great idea.
And sometimes if a woman is having difficulty getting pregnant, she's given injections that will increase the amount of eggs she produces at any one time. And so all of those get fertilized at the same time, but it's not healthy to like give birth to more than two or three at a time. And you may have eight fertilized eggs. So those eggs get housed somewhere for possible future use, but that is very costly as well to house those eggs. Is the fertility benefit cover that?
Well, there's two different ways to look at egg freeze. So I just made to be clear, if it's part of an IVF process and you're fortunate enough to have eight embryos, as you said, typically that would be a very high number. But if you're able to have, eight fertilized, eggs obviously fertilized and become embryos, what part of the management and proper protocols at this point would be to avoid doing what my wife and I did is implanting four because we were, out of money and it was less common to freeze eggs back then. We did have a set of twins, but we could have had quadruplets, and that's not, you know, healthy for the quadruplets, even the twins, the patient. So, and very, very costly, is like kids were in the NICU for a month, which today would be about an $800,000 claim. But anyway, the idea now is single embryo transfer to be safe, as I mentioned, to be, you know, to give the best opportunity that for that embryo to be, you know, to you know, obviously become a child, and ultimately freezing the seven, implanting the one. If the one takes, then you have a child, you have seven frozen, and it's actually not that expensive, not in the grand scheme of things. But that's part of an IVF process. And so if the first one doesn't take, then you'll go to the second, the third, the fourth, and hopefully, you know, you'll get, you know, several children out of eight harvested eggs. But that's different than elective egg freezing. So what happens there is, just to make a distinction, that's a benefit that's becoming more popular, as some organizations are trying to offer female employees the opportunity to choose, you know, when they have their family. And there's a lot of reasons why, and that's maybe a whole other podcast discussion. So just kind of leave it at that. But, you know, a lot of employers are saying, look, we have women who are working towards, you know, working on their careers. And what they have learned is that to harvest and store eggs, or eggs when they're younger, say at 26, offers a better chance of having children than waiting until you're, you know, late 30s or 40s and then going through IVF. So, storing them earlier on in life has been something that women have been choosing to do more frequently.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say it's, you know, it's prevalent, but it's becoming more popular.
Okay. So I just want to clarify, because it didn't occur to me until you just said this. Elective egg freezing is when you say, like, I'm 26, I have no intention of having a family because I'm worked on my career, so I just have the doctors harvest a bunch of my unfertilized eggs and they freeze them for later use. But the IVF is an actual fertilized egg or an embryo, and
sure.
And if I have multiple fertilized eggs, I am choosing not to have all of them implanted in me all at once. So we freeze some of those, and that would most likely be covered under the managed fertility benefit, as opposed to, you know, my 26-year-old self who said, hey, just freeze some eggs because until later.
That's right. So the IVF cycle that we've been talking about would include the harvesting of and the fertilization of the eggs into embryos, and then the cryogenic storage of those embryos for use for individual embryo transfer in multiple, you know, multiple attempts. So you don't have to go through the very expensive process of reinjecting and then reharvesting. So it brings the cost down. It's why, you know, a managed benefit, helping make sure that, you know, that's the procedure that's taken, is of great importance. Now, and doctors are increasingly doing this and have been for some time, so it's become more commonplace. And then the other is a separate benefit, and that would be, you know, elective the egg freezing benefit. So that would be paid for different amount, different type of benefit, and that, you know, again, available through groups. Often through groups like ours, it can be managed and paid for by the employer.
Okay, so if I do not work for a large company or my employer, maybe it's medium, somewhat large size, but they don't offer a fertility benefit, how would I get one? Or can I?
Yeah, so if it's not offered, then if it's not offered, it doesn't mean you can't get help. And so, you know, when fertility, you know, believe it or not, we've been around for 22 years, and the company originated with a program that was focused on the individual consumer. And our founder and CEO still believes that that's something that we should stay true to. And so while most of our relationships with patients are through employer contracts or health plans, we still do offer a program for individuals. And so if they don't have coverage, they can come to WinFertility, to our website, winfertility.com, and they can work with one of our nurses. They can choose to buy a cycle at a discount using our network of doctors that we maintain. And also, we can assist them with obtaining, the pharmaceuticals at a significant discount. So that is available to them through us.
Okay. I think you've gone through most of my questions. Is there anything else that we should know about a managed versus an unmanaged fertility benefit?
Yeah, I think what's been interesting is that it's been through very vocal employees that have pushed employers to adopt these programs at an increasing rate. And with the, dramatic increase in recent years, really last 10 years of IVF that's been required, mostly because people are waiting till much later in life, it's one of the highest desired benefit programs by employees. And employers are responding. And so I would certainly suggest that, if it turns out that, your listeners are interested, that they should talk to HR and have the company look into these types of benefits. Because what's interesting is for employers, having a managed benefit can often, may not cost them as much as they think. Very often, in the example that I use for myself, my employer at the time was not offering a benefit. And yet I almost cost them $1 million because of the decisions we made to, implant 4 embryos. So that is covered. And, they would have to cover, my employer had to pay for the NICU stay. So through analysis and the request from employees, often we find that it's not an expensive, there's a program to implement. And in some cases, especially if they had a program in place, the return on the investment and having it managed can be as high as sevenfold.
Wow. For myself, I am past the childbearing age. At least I never want to have another one. So if my employer does implement fertility benefits, even though I don't want to participate in that, would my general insurance go up to help cover my employer's cost of implementing the fertility benefits?
Well, yours, no, not necessarily. I mean, usually there's an expense, but like I said, it almost in some cases reduces the cost of the overall general medical program. So it's not necessarily more expensive. If it's a new program that has never been offered before, it can go up. But generally, the way they would likely cost share that, you wouldn't see much of an increase. It's a fairly low cost benefit to offer. The managed portion of it.
Thank you so much, Peter Nieves. You are the Chief Commercial Officer with WinFertility, and you've just opened my eyes to a whole different aspect of things I knew nothing about.
I am glad I could help.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor.
find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.